From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Wednesday at the White House during a listening session focused on the start of Black History Month. President Donald Trump made some remarks about black history, focusing largely on his own presidential campaign and including remarks about former Apprentice contestant Omarosa Manigault, who now works for Donald Trump. Well, during his brief remarks, the president declared that Frederick Douglass has done an amazing job and is someone whose work is being recognized more and more these days. That's an interesting thing to say about one of the most important people in our country's history and someone who died 122 years ago. You could go the humorous route with this, as Democrat and Chronicle columnist Dave Andreatta did, going to the gravesite of Frederick Douglass in search of an interview, but we're choosing to take a more serious tack this hour. We want to know if a president's ignorance can be harmful. We want to know what we're teaching about Frederick Douglass and what it truly means to reach out to communities of color, as President Trump promised he would if he won the White House. Let me go ahead and welcome my guest for the hour. Leticia Doucette is here. She's a disability rights activist and a board member of Rochester Accessible Adventures. Leticia, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Joe Torre is here. Joe's a professor of history at the College of at Brockport. He hosts a workshop in Rochester each summer called the Rochester Reform Trail, where teachers from around New York State come to learn more about Douglass and other prominent Rochester reformers so they can better teach their classes. Joe, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And on the line with us is Teresa Bowick. Teresa is a local community organizer, and Teresa, always nice to have you. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you so much, Evan, for having me and for having this discussion about Frederick Augustus Washington Bailey, a.k.a. Frederick Douglass. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you, of course. And let me just, for anybody who missed it, let's go ahead and listen to what President Trump had to say about Frederick Douglass. This is from Wednesday at the White House.
I am very proud now that we have a museum, the National Mall, where people can learn about Reverend King, so many other things. Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, I notice. Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, and millions more black Americans who made America what it is today. Big impact. I'm proud to honor this heritage, and we'll be honoring it more and more.
Leticia Doucette, did it sound to you like the president had any idea who Frederick Douglass was?
No. He cited the big three. You know, that's what we learned through Black History Month. But it just seems that, you know, as is typical, very ignorant of the rich and diverse history of blacks in America.
Joe, does it sound to you like the president knows anything about Frederick Douglass?
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't seem so. And as Leticia just mentioned, a cursory knowledge of the big three would at least be helpful, although, of course, there's a much broader and deeper history of African-American achievement and contributions.
Teresa, what do you think? Does it sound like the president knows anything about Frederick Douglass?
It did not, but I was a little concerned because he has all these people that surrounding him, and I was wondering, where were the people that are responsible for briefing him, and could they have done a better job and at least making it sound like he knew what he was talking about? So I felt like, you know, the people that's responsible for briefing the president didn't do their job as well on this.
Well, fair point, though I think we'll get into the question of whether a man who wins the White House should have to be briefed on Frederick Douglass, but it's a good point, Teresa.
Well, yeah. That's a whole nother show.
Yeah, well, we'll get there. But I've seen a number of Trump supporters on Twitter say, essentially, okay, so what? So the president doesn't know who Frederick Douglass is. Why does that matter? Joe, why do you think that matters?
Well, it has tremendous consequences to be completely devoid of knowledge of historical events which affected the nature of the country, our historical development. But also, I think it speaks to, you know, the fact that he seems to be less than concerned with people who aren't his base. And he has consistently, in his very short tenure, spoken and acted specifically to his base. And he seems to, you know, anybody else doesn't seem to be on his consciousness except as some sort of group to demonize or vilify or you know, diminish.
Teresa, what would you say to the people who've said, okay, maybe he doesn't know anything about Frederick Douglass, so what?
You know, that's the part of this whole conversation that so divisive when we talk about, you know, this peaceful transfer of power and how President Obama and Mrs. Obama wanted to be helpful in this transition. And it seems like a real kick in the face to say, so what, he doesn't know. I think he absolutely positively needs to know black history. I mean, if you're going to lead the most powerful nation in the world, how is it that you don't know or you have no idea who Frederick Douglass is and the impact that he has on where we're at in the nation with race relations.
All right, same question, Letitia. What do you think?
And I just, you know, agree with Sister Woman here. If you can't understand a simple concept of this man has been dead for over 122 years, how are you going to actually make positive changes towards the issues of the Black community and institutionalized racism as well? You know, these are complex matters. If you can't understand something simple, how then can you affect change in something more complex?
Is this funny at all to you, Letitia? I mean, so a lot of people are sort of making light of this, and I get it. It's fodder for late night, that kind of thing, but is it funny to you?
It's funny in the way that it's just the same old, same old. Most white Americans are ignorant about the richness and diverseness of Black individuals. And as Black Americans, we're also ignorant about our own rich history because that's not taught as American history. It's something separate. Oh, you must have Black History Month. But Black history is American history, and it's not a cohesive unit to talk about anything other than slavery, which even then has been watered down in our education today.
Teresa, did you find anything funny about it?
I did not, and I was appalled when Vice President Pence, when he made his comment about Black history, and he immediately went to Abraham Lincoln and freeing the slaves, and I was thinking to myself, okay, here you just haven't been in office 2 weeks yet. You mean you couldn't look to the accomplishments of the first Black African-American president? Like, that totally, that wasn't your first thought? Like, you had an opportunity to kind of ease the tension that's going on between President Trump and Representative John Lewis. His work, that didn't come to mind. So this is not funny. It's an insult to Black America that you, as a president of the United States, and you as a vice president, that you don't have a clue.
Professor Torrey, same question. And, you know, I see people on social media saying that they've got tickets to Friday night in New York City. Crispus Attucks and Frederick Douglass will be speaking, and you know, they're having fun with this. They're trying to use it as a way to poke fun. Our two other panelists don't think it's funny. Did you find any humor in it?
No. Well, I think many of us are shell shocked by what's happening right now, and I think after 10 or so brief days, the various appointments, which are really meant to undermine cabinet positions, not to actually support cabinet positions or support those agencies, everything seems to be a kind of joke. And the qualifications for cabinet positions seem to be a complete ignorance of what the responsibilities are in that department. So I think that, you know, it's not surprising that he would be ignorant of that history. And I think a lot of folks are kind of shell-shocked by what's going on, and the humor is a kind of release mechanism in some ways.
Well, I want to grab our first phone call, and I'll let our listeners know. We're going to try to touch on a lot this hour, not the least of which is the life of Frederick Douglass that apparently, pretty obviously, needs more attention. But if you want to call the program and weigh in on the president's remarks on Black history, Frederick Douglass, whether you found those remarks in their entirety appropriate. I mean, he only talked for 2 minutes and 17 seconds and spent about half that time talking about winning more votes, his campaign, and Omarosa Manigault. But if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're going to start with Bruce in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Bruce.
I want to preface this that I am by no means a Trump fan. The first thing I did when I saw he was elected, I sent an email to Chuck Schumer through his website that said, filibuster, Senate hold, you know, resist. So with that in mind, he didn't sound like he thought Frederick Douglass was alive. He said people were recognizing what he's done. So we have so many deeper issues that we have to deal with. This seems on the petty side, and having a knowledge of history certainly I think would be a help, but is it a prerequisite? I don't know that it is, but I think that dealing with these petty pieces rather than the major components of what at issue are not going to help our cause.
So Bruce, before I kick it over to our panelists to respond, let me just follow up with one question for you. Number one, I think I understand the crux of the point you're making is that we're going to have some serious crisis if we don't already on our hands, and that we can't chase every ball, that we've got to be really focused on the big things, and to you this doesn't seem like a big thing. Is that a fair representation of sort of how you're feeling?
Well, first, he may not know about history, but what he said did not intonate that he thought Frederick Douglass was alive. He said he's being recognized for his accomplishments. That could well, you know, whether he knew he was or he wasn't.
Okay, yeah, I mean he says he's done a great job, which is basically what you would say about, like, Bill, the office manager, who might be worth a promotion. I mean, it was sort of a weird thing to say about someone who's been dead for 122 years.
It was not phrased well, but I don't know what we can expect.
Okay.
Okay. It's just that we have so many more important things.
Okay.
That if we nitpick at the small, we'll never get any acceptance or crossover from the people we need, from the people who are on the edge of his side.
Okay.
We have to stress the important stuff.
I understand the point. Now, I'm a white guy. Are you a white guy, Bruce?
Old fat white guy, yes.
Okay, there you go. I mean, so you and I are two white guys. Do you think there are times where it's maybe not necessarily, for us to say...
I agree with everyone that Black history is not taught enough in our schools.
Yeah.
It is terrible. That is terrible. And a lot of that stuff is, you know, so we all need to become more aware of that, of all of our history, you know, Indian history, and, mm-hmm. you know, the truth about some of these things that happened. You know, there's such a whitewashing, a cleansing of our history that, you know, we don't know where we really came from.
Okay, but all I'm saying there, and I'm going to let Letitia start in the response to your comments, is that when you and I as white guys evaluate whether this matters, we're not always the best people to decide if an American president who might not have any knowledge of one of the most important Americans ever, Frederick Douglass, what that might mean to that community. You know what I mean, Bruce? I'm not trying to sort of pick at you.
I don't think he has an idea about history at all.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, I take that point.
He's not the brightest bulb in the pack, you know. And true, I think our if you don't learn from history, you're bound to repeat it.
Yeah.
So I think history is important, but the stress on this particular aspect of it, I think, will disengage people from our argument because of it, rather than, oh, yeah, he shouldn't be president because of this one thing. That's all I'm saying.
Bruce, thank you for the phone call. I really appreciate it. I'm going to let our panel respond. Letitia, what do you think?
I was actually making a somewhat similar comment before the show even started, and how my purpose of being here is to talk about in the context of larger issues, especially with the goals of what Bannon says and what we were talking about, you know, sending the military to Chicago or talking about it. Bringing back stop and frisk laws, I think those are important to put in that context. Because again, if you are ignorant about one of our foremost leaders and you don't know these issues, these complex issues that are going on right now with structural racism, then you're not going to be able to effectively have, you know, the right strategies in order to mitigate the problems that are happening. So I want to see this as a launching point, not continually digging at, you know, the obvious.
Okay. Teresa Boak, what do you think?
You know, I'm a nurse. And so as a healthcare provider, we often looked at signs and symptoms. And the caller made the comment of this kind of being petty. Before a person typically dies from the flu, they start out with a temperature or with a cough. If you choose to ignore the temperature, if you choose to ignore the cough, then it just gets worse and worse and worse until that person is there, until you get to the demise of that person. We can't allow what's happening in our nation, these signs and symptoms that just keep going and going and going and going until we fail to exist. Like, this needs to be put in check now. He needs to be briefed, taught, given some information on how not knowing who Frederick Douglass is plays to race relations in America. This is a symptom of a bigger issue.
All right, Professor Torrey, what do you think?
I think that the caller makes a good point, that it might have been a rhetorical slip of some kind. And, of course, Joe Biden was famous for these, and they weren't taken seriously. But the fact is that it's part of a larger pattern of behavior, which seems to diminish the achievements of minority groups, whether they be African Americans or Mexican Americans or Muslim Americans. And it seems to be a kind of strategy or a part of a consistent pattern where that sort of ignorance plays to his base and plays to larger political issues that he's after. The slip in and of itself, were somebody else to make it, might be an innocent guffaw, and we might laugh at it. But as part of an overall pattern, I think it's much more significant. And it's actually very ironic in a way, because one of the you mentioned that, you know, as white guys, it's sometimes hard to see these sort of aggressive mistakes for what they are. One of the great strengths that Frederick Douglass had, one of the reasons that he was such a fundamentally important person, was that his perspective as a kind of subaltern within the society, and at the same time a great intellectual, allowed him to make the kinds of observations that would expose these kinds of hypocrisies in really powerful ways. So I think he would have understood this as a kind of rhetorical power play mm-hmm. and a diminishing of his achievements, and he would have been able to make clear the case that, in fact, this is not a harmless mistake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting context in light of Douglass himself. Every phone line's lit up, so let's try to work through some more comments here. This is Jim in Rochester. Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, I want to bring to your listening audience's attention, if Donald Trump was savvy, he would have gone right over to the National Harbor. That's a huge development across the river from Alexandria, Virginia, the first exit from the Woodrow Wilson Bridge on the Maryland side, where some big New York City, big-time real estate developer put a marina in there where people bring their yachts and boats and a lot of entertainment, big convention halls. In fact, the Republicans and Democrats have had their winter meetings there. But in that National Harbor, there are three bronze statues of people who had tremendous impact on the lives of millions of people in the 19th and 20th century. One was Franklin Roosevelt, one was Winston Churchill, to keep that agrarian bigot from killing all them people in Europe, and you know who I'm talking about, Adolf Hitler, and the other one was Frederick Douglass. So we need to get a perspective of who we are and where we are. And I want to say one other thing. Douglass gave two speeches. In 1848, he gave one in Canandaigua, New York. Why should I celebrate the 4th of July? And on that stage with him was Susan B. Anthony, who was advocating for women's suffrage, the right to vote, basic human democracy attributes if you're going to have a country. And his argument at that speech was that, how can you celebrate the 4th of July and you're in human bondage with leg irons and handcuffs? And the next speech he gave was downtown Rochester in 1852, Corinthian Hall, which is across the river from West Nanda Rochester Convention Center, where the old Lawyers Co-op, Lawyers Publishing headquarters was located. And he gave a speech there that it was a knockout punch. And he predicted the Civil War 9 years before it occurred, because he said that those black slaves were going to be freed one way or another. So our people, our school systems, our teachers, our administrators, our churches, we need to understand what's at stake and do something to help ourselves. If not, there might not be a United States of America.
Jim, thank you for the phone call. Strong stuff. And I'll ask the panel, based on Jim's remarks there, he says our school systems, we all have a part in making sure people are educated, that understand our history as we move forward here. So Leticia DeSette, who's a disability rights activist and a board member of Rochester Accessible Adventures, one of my guests, I'll start with you on this. I think Jim's point is important, that, I mean, it's amazing how many people are not aware of Douglass's accomplishments, whether the president or not. I mean, I take Bruce's point. We don't know exactly what Donald Trump knew or didn't about Frederick Douglass, but in general, how do you feel about how comprehensive our American history is? I mean, real American history in this country.
Well, thankfully, I grew up at a time where education tended to be a little bit more comprehensive. But when I look at my younger siblings, you know, history lessons, et cetera, it's more watered down. and the language is more mitigated, and we don't talk about these deep concepts of how institutionalized racism came to be. You know, why did it take so long between the Emancipation Proclamation to the Civil Rights Act to be enacted? You know, what happened in that period of time? What was going on? Why were there so many barriers to racial equality? So, yes, definitely. You know, I am not from Rochester, but I knew about Frederick Douglass mainly because I was homeschooled, and my parents made sure that I had a focus on Black history, and so learned about as much as I could. And you don't have that kind of comprehensive type of education now.
Okay. Professor Joe Torrey from the College at Brockport, on the subject of education, are we getting it wrong in this country? I mean, it's a broad, big question, I understand. But, I mean, we're looking at the events this week kind of staggered that people could be uneducated or sort of willfully ignorant about big subjects. What, are we getting it wrong?
You know, we're trying very hard to get it right. I think it's very, very difficult. And for a long time now, the construction of historical narratives has played to specific power groups, such that a whole whack of people, whole groups of people were diminished and excluded. And I think one of the big questions that we ask, for example, in the history department is, what is the purpose of historical analysis? What is the purpose of thinking historically or understanding our history? And there's many, you know, different levels. I think at a certain extent, we can't be whole as human beings without a kind of sense of our past and who we are and what our place in the social order is. So, for example, when you exclude Mexican Americans or African Americans or any group whatsoever from the broader picture of accomplishments in a historical narrative, you marginalize that group and in effect destabilize and hinder that group's ability to play a role in civic life and to have a sense of well-being about themselves from a personal level and a community level as well. So I think the entire movement in historical narratives, at the very least, really since the civil rights movement in this country, was about creating a more inclusive historical space that might recognize our achievements as a whole group.
I'm going to ask Teresa the same question in a moment, but let me follow up with Professor Torrey, because you host a workshop in Rochester each summer called the Rochester Reform Trail. Teachers around New York State come to learn more about Frederick Douglass, other prominent Rochester reformers, so they can better teach their classes, right?
Yeah, teachers from across the country, actually. It's an NEH-funded Landmarks of American History and Culture workshop. And this summer will be the fifth year that we've run it, and which means we brought approximately 400 teachers from all over the country, at least 40 states or so, and K through 12 educators. And it's really, you know, the Landmarks workshops are based on the idea that place matters in history. History doesn't take place in abstract time and space. It takes place in very specific places and very specific points in time. And what we try and figure out is how a city like Rochester, which was really a kind of marginal outpost in Western New York, you know, burgeoning, growing and all of that, but still rather insignificant place relative to Boston or New York or something, how it became the center for this effort to transform gender and racial relationships in ways which are still, you know, we still resonate with us today. We haven't figured that stuff out yet. And really, it's one of the most profound revolutions perhaps in world history. And it's taking place right here in Rochester. It's really one of the epicenters for that. And so we try and figure out how Rochester came to be. Why did somebody like Susan B. Anthony settle here? Why did Frederick Douglass settle here? He could have settled anywhere in the United States and been in a very good position to carry out a successful career. The idea is to take, you know, this back to the classrooms and to have students benefit from teachers' experience. And I can, you know, it's been a tremendously wonderful experience. The Douglass piece is incredibly moving for some folks. We've been, you know, to University of Rochester Special Collections, for example, has hosted us many times. Mount Hope Cemetery, of course, and Susan B. Anthony House. And literally, I've seen school teachers from Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, California cry when, you know, they're holding a piece of Frederick Douglass's hair in their hands or you know, enter into a kind of deep respect at his gravesite. It's been a really wonderful experience that I think has improved their ability to teach the history.
Will you come back this summer, bring a panel of teachers from around the country? Will you come on the program here?
We would love to.
All right, this is a formal invitation. I want to see you here this summer, and we'll talk about it
more.
You
got it.
Teresa Bowick, how do you feel about education? I mean, again, I know this is a broad question, but you know, you think about what maybe what you learned growing up and what kids might be learning today and what we can do better.
I believe teaching Black history is a shared responsibility. I don't put it 100% on a school district. I believe that the responsibility is shared with the schools, is shared with the families, is shared with the churches. In Conkey Cruisers, we're a neighborhood bicycling group. A part of our component of our program is history. Now, most folks are like, wow, why in the world would you interject history into a bicycling program? Because my goal is to make sure that our participants, especially our school-age participants, can get the most out of the time that they're with us. And so we do trivia around Black history. We learn the mayors. We learn the presidents. And you know, and it's just an opportunity. And if you have that chance and you have access to young people and you have this information, share it. It's a shared responsibility. I don't believe that it lies 100% in the school district to teach our children Black history.
Building on Teresa's comment from earlier, Peter on Twitter says, ignorance is one thing, but Trump was at a scheduled event and didn't bother prepping. He showed a complete disregard. That's from Peter on Twitter. I think that's largely the point Teresa made earlier in the program, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of people are sharing some agreement with that. I'm going to get our only break of the hour. I'm going to come back with more of your phone calls. And I kind of want to revisit a moment in the campaign that stood out to me. And I wonder, in the context of discussions we've been having all week about people in marginalized communities, people in communities that feel forgotten, what does real outreach look like? I mean, it certainly doesn't look like ignorance, but what could it look like going forward? So we'll continue that with Teresa Bowick, who's on the line with us from Conkey Cruisers. She's a nurse, a community organizer. Lutetia Doucette's here. She's a disability rights activist and board member of Rochester Accessible Adventures. And Joe Torrey is a professor of history at the College at Brockport. We'll be right back in just a moment. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about plagiarism. How to detect it, how to root it out, how to prevent it in the first place. What about software and technology that professors and universities can use to help find out if a student has lifted material? And how do we make sure that students understand that academic theft is a real offense? That's next up. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before we grab Rich in Rochester on the phone, I want to listen to what Donald Trump said in August campaigning in Michigan. This was his appeal to African Americans across the country about why they shouldn't just keep voting for Democrats. This is Donald Trump.
Look how much African American communities have suffered under Democratic control. To those I say the following. What do you have to lose by trying something new like Trump? What do you have to lose? I say it again, what do you have to lose? Look, what do you have to lose? You're living in poverty, your schools are no good, you have no jobs, 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose?
All right, Teresa Bowick, so that's a moment where he's saying, try me, give me a chance. I will reach out in ways that the Democrats have not. I want to know how you feel listening to those remarks and then in the context of what we've been discussing this hour. Go ahead, Teresa.
I feel like it's fraud, that it was a great campaign speech. It sounded really, really good. But one thing my grandmother taught me, and it stays with my heart, actions speak louder than words. So what have I had the potential to lose in the first few days of the Trump administration? Let's see. What about health care? What about reproductive rights? What about my friends, my non-white friends that cannot even enter into the country? I have an awful lot to lose.
I'm going to grab a phone call, and we'll let the panel continue to respond to that. But I know Rich was on the subject of whether what we heard on Wednesday from the president at the start of Black History Month was sort of, was intended or not. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, my point is that in any of these staged events, this time taken to look at what you say, they vet every word, they spend the time looking at this. even Mike Pence's speech, these things aren't done off the cuff. So this speaks to his entire administration and the people around him who they really don't care. It doesn't matter to them. I don't think in his life, in the life that he's led, he's been around that many minorities. He's had to deal with them. There's a total disconnect, and there's a level of apathy that's scary. I don't even know if it's hate. He just doesn't even care one way or the other. Mm. And that's my biggest concern. And to the point of his speech, he talks as if just the Democrats were there and just doing whatever they want. Every step of the way, the conservatives fought and did everything they could to stop anything that was done. So it was dishonest, that entire statement, and it was just insulting and everything. It was just really bad.
Rich, thanks for the phone call. It's also important to point out, not all African-Americans live in cities, and not all African-Americans are unemployed or, you know, I mean, like, that picture was as grim as he could possibly have painted it. It's not to say that there isn't a remarkable amount of work that needs to be done. I think everybody agrees with that. But let me ask Leticia then. The president said in August, try me. I will reach out. Real outreach, real impact. What would that look like? What do you think, Leticia?
Well, my mama didn't raise no fool. So, you know, I'm just going to say miss me with that. Under Republican control, we saw, you know, the crack and heroin epidemic reach our community. We saw the so-called war on drugs reach our community and thousands upon thousands of black men going into prison. We saw the rise of stop and frisk from Republicans. So the fact that another white guy is coming in saying, I am the answer. No, thank you. So that's kind of how I would have to say. Real reform, real outreach from any sort of government agency is about dismantling those systems that continue to incarcerate our black men, that continue to push drugs on our streets, that continue to have poor housing structures. You have to actually dismantle and give up your own power in order to uplift the entire society as a whole.
Did you feel President Obama engaged in enough real outreach and reform?
I think he tried. And again, with the opposition from the Republicans, again, we will stop and block anything because it's Obama. You know, he tried his best with the ACA, and we saw what happened, and we got what we have today because of Republican obstructionism. And these are issues, healthcare issues, that affect minorities even more, especially, you know, looking at myself as a disabled black woman. You know, higher rates of ovarian cancer and cervical cancer due to inaccessibility, you know, higher rates of diabetes due to poor food availability in our communities. So it really ends up becoming, if you really want to make change for the black community, you must then dismantle those systems that have been put in place that have allowed individuals like Trump and Bannon in order to gain the power that they have.
Okay. Professor Torrey, let me ask it in a different way to you then. You're someone who not only values education as an educator, you educate the educators. Well, the president, I think it's, again, I don't mean to offend Trump voters, but I mean, Donald Trump has been caught many times, you know, sort of speaking about things he doesn't know a lot about here. So you hear him in August saying to voters in Michigan, you know, you're living in this virtual hell. What do you have to lose? Go with me here. You wanted to educate him on what real outreach might look like, or at least something to learn. How would you start?
Well, you know, first of all, what I'd say that is that seems to be a pattern of a rhetorical strategy that is really meant to create this dystopian vision, which then he can come in and rescue by way of some sort of authoritarian mechanism.
That's what he said at the convention. Only I.
Yeah. He paints this picture of black America that looks like hell, and then on his inauguration speech he you know, paints this American carnage, and he presents everything as somehow dystopian and collapsing and falling apart, when in fact I would argue that exact opposite, that we've made tremendous progress in terms of racial justice and equality, we've made tremendous progress in terms of economic benefits, and so I think, you know, his rhetorical strategy there is very, you know, he's crazy, but he's crazy like a fox in some ways, and it's not an innocent thing. In terms of outreach, I don't think it was his intention to reach out to anybody in that speech. I think he's, again, speaking to a base, and he wants to present this grim view of America so he can elicit kind of policies that he is currently eliciting. And I think one simple way where he's sincere about outreach would be to simply stop demonizing people and to stop spewing hate and to stop protecting people who practice hate speech as a kind of profitable sideline. You know, he threatened to pull Berkeley's funds the other day, federal funds, because they protested some Breitbart editor who's on a college tour, which is really a kind of hate speech tour, if you will. So were he actually sincere about that, he would simply not acting and simply reversing that path might be the best way for him to do it.
Not sure what it says, though, about us, that the first thing that a president should do is stop demonizing groups of people.
It's been a very powerful strategy. It got him elected, essentially.
David in Rochester on the phones is next. Go ahead, David.
Frederick Douglass was a man who had an interesting background in any period of human history, and the fact that he is so little known right here in Rochester in terms of being a family man, in terms of how he was able to escape from slavery and the woman, his wife, who facilitated that. And therefore, we are missing the boat, both in terms of influencing our school districts to make this an important part of the experiences of both children and their families. For you see, it's a shared responsibility, family and school and church, to make sure that we understand what the price has been to create as good a society as we have, and how that is threatened by such nonsense as Mr. Trump provides, and is abetted or underscored by the lackadaisical attitude of our school and not doing it. For example, right out there where the Douglases spent 25 years on South Avenue on a farm that was an Underground Railroad station, they have a school building that bears the name of a person born after the Douglases left here. Very little is known about the youngest Douglas child, the only one born here, and the first one to die. And so there are all kinds of opportunities whereby children, teachers, parents would embrace this legacy and make it so that people want to come to Rochester to see, to feel, to imbibe what that spirit that came from Douglas meant for the nation. Because even though the nation was powerful in the 19th century, it was on the brink of being destroyed. Self-destruction, it would have been. Self-destruction had not President Lincoln and others listened and finally made sure that the armed forces of the United States would include men of color, men most of whom had been enslaved. But if we would do this, we can make Rochester the among the crowning points in which people want to have their children experience, and therefore continue to make this nation a better nation.
David, thank you for the phone call. I really appreciate that. Letitia, what do you think?
Well, thankfully, you know, we've made some gains as far as learning more about Frederick Douglass. Last year, Jeeva had a reading about Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony and commissioned a play to be written about the friendship between the two by the playwright Matt Smart. And I had the wonderful opportunity of going in and helping to edit that and giving comments, etc. So hopefully that will be coming this year back to
Rochester. Do we know yet?
I have no idea, but...
Okay.
Shameless plug, please, Jeeva, bring the play.
Absolutely.
So, you know, having that kind of knowledge, and it's here. You know, we have a great local historian, Rose O'Keefe, who has written about Frederick Douglass's family and several books that have come out on that that are, you know, widely available. And taking that time to go out and explore and fall in love with Rochester, maybe through Frederick Douglass, you know, that would be a great way of, you know, bringing more knowledge and education to the community.
Teresa Bowick, how do you feel about David's phone call?
I agree, of course, that it is definitely a shared responsibility. And, you know, and when we started having this conversation about this show and talking about Frederick Douglass, and I said to myself, what would Frederick Douglass today say to President Trump? What words would he say to him? And this is what I found in his own words, and I said, I'm going to have a plaque made, and I'm going to send it to President Trump. And this is directly from Frederick Douglass, and he says, no man can put a chain about the ankle of his fellow man without at last finding the other end fastened about his own neck. To President Trump, from Frederick Douglass.
Hmm. Professor Torrey, what do you make of David's phone call?
No, I think definitely more profound knowledge of Douglass's contributions is necessary at the national level, regional level, local school districts. I'm often surprised at the number of folks that I run across who aren't really as familiar with it. What's come out in the Rochester Reform Trail last year, which was a really interesting development, we had Larry Hudson from U of R come as a speaker, and usually Dennis Carr takes us down Mount Hope Cemetery, but Vicky Schmidt took us on this one occasion. And one of the things they emphasized, that it's not only Douglass, is that there's a huge community of free African Americans in Rochester, and really from Buffalo to Syracuse to Utica, that's critical to the abolition movement, and we're a really, really powerful progressive force in this nation in the 19th century. So folks like Austin Stewart, Thomas James actually ordained Frederick Douglass in the New Bedford, Massachusetts AM&E Zion Church that they both belonged to, that Thomas James led. And Thomas James is also buried in Mount Hope Cemetery in a kind of nondescript corner of it. I have a current student, Cheryl Sampson, who's doing a project to really make James a more well-known character. So it's not just about, you know, there's this wonderful narrative of Douglass and his tremendously heroic efforts. A huge intellectual, something I think is not really smartest man in the room at any one time in the 19th century. And then on top of that, you have this infrastructure, a community that was really critical to his success. And I think highlighting that community would also be very, very, it's a very necessary educational goal that we should all have.
By the way, before I grab another phone call, Professor, do you happen to know, I don't offhand, I would think local grade schools, every local grade school in the area would at least be visiting at some point. Every student should be going to the gravesite, having those kind of lessons, as you say, more place-based education. Are most schools doing that?
You know, I have no idea.
I don't know. Teresa, do you know offhand if schools are doing that?
I'm not aware, and I certainly, you know, I have a lot of contact with young people, and I haven't heard of anybody saying we went to the cemetery, we did anything special around Frederick Douglass, other than at times there is a oracle group that does speeches.
Okay.
And they usually do them tied into Black History Month and the MLK celebration that takes place.
Hmm. Lutetia, you said you were homeschooled. I know you didn't grow, up here. Is that right?
I spent, you know, my middle school years here.
See, that's the advantage of homeschooling is you make your own. A lot of the times you create these kind of lessons, and a lot of homeschoolers get a chance to get out and see more. But do you happen to know offhand if there are school groups doing that? I would love to. And teachers, anybody in school groups, email me after the program and let me know, because I think this place-based education, we need to see more of it. Do you know?
That I don't know too much of, but I think it's a great way. Frederick Douglass highlights, you know, we also get this narrative that Black people were these hapless, helpless individuals waiting on white people to rescue us from slavery. And that's just not the case. You know, there were activists like Frederick Douglass. We were actively involved in our own freedom. We were actively involved in, you know, not just the civil rights movement, but what's going on today. So it gives that counter narrative of this, you know, like in Trump's speech of like, oh, well, I will be the one to rescue you and help you with all the blights of your community. And Frederick Douglass has shown us that, you know, we can and do have the ability to do that for ourselves, and that we can and do have the ability to do that in collaboration with other individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and conservative listeners, isn't that interesting that Letitia points out, you go back to Trump's speech as saying, only I can do this. The hallmark of conservatism used to be empowering people. And this is a president with a bit of the opposite message. Real quick, by the way, Joe, you really feel, I know, that place-based education can be powerful. It can be almost spiritual, isn't it? I mean, when you're in those places, it can be almost visceral, isn't it?
Well, it increases engagement by students because they're standing on the place where these things took place. But to Letitia's point, I think that, you know, so agency is a culturally constructed thing. It's an idea that's culturally constructed. And one of the broader or larger elements that goes into that cultural construction is history, a sense of place, a sense of who we are. So, you know, without that, people really do feel impoverished or disempowered.
Ruth in Rochester called in to remind us. She says words really matter. Trump didn't mention essentially Holocaust Remembrance Day, or on Holocaust Remembrance Day, didn't make remarks about Jewish people around the world. And she said, we can't ignore that or his ignorance about Frederick Douglass. That's from Ruth in Rochester. And let me grab another phone call. I think this is Don. Is that you, Don?
This is Don from East Rochester.
Hi, Don. Go ahead.
When I never heard what he said before you played it at the beginning of this program. And when I heard it, my first reaction was that he thinks this man is still alive. Or if he is not still alive, he only died recently. Donald Trump's knowledge of history is abysmal. And he went to a military school for his secondary education. And then all of a sudden I read that he went to the Wharton School of Business. In neither of those places is he likely to get any in-depth knowledge about Frederick Douglass. But to make him sound, he probably didn't even know Rosa Parks, although her story is a little more recent and her death was within our lifetime. He doesn't know any of these things, and I just think it's abysmal. I just think it's abysmal that he... And his aides have no idea either, because how can they clue him in if they don't know themselves? They probably don't know themselves who Frederick Douglass is. It just sounded like he thought the man was still alive or had died within, say, the past 50 years. Even if someone had told him that Frederick Douglass was the number one abolitionist in the United States, that should have given him a clue that the man is no longer alive and has been dead for quite some time. Mm. That's all I got to say on the subject.
Well, Don, thank you for the phone call. I don't know that you're going to get much opposition to those remarks, but we're certainly glad to give you an outlet for it if you want to share them. Let me grab Rudolph in Rochester. Go ahead, Rudolph.
How you doing?
Good.
You know, I just wanted to caution everyone to just stop a minute. Now, from a spiritual standpoint of view, the Bible speaks of someone coming who, but it refers to in the church, but it speaks of someone coming as an angel of light. And it speaks of someone deceiving the very elect. Now, I'm using that word. It speaks in comparative to the church, but the very elect. I'm speaking about the way he deceived a lot of folks. Are Republicans when he came in, his own let's say his own party, and then he speaks of everything to that narrative. The Bible speaks of money, the love of money, and you know Donald speaks about jobs, and he throws that in people's faces. He's also we talk about the people that elected him. Well, they were hoodwinked their own selves. You know, folks need a job. They wanted a change. Donald's talking about jobs, and from that standpoint of view, now the way he's moving and the way he's talking about countries and nations being, you know, we're talking about war. Now, keep your mind. There's always been a lot of jobs when there's been war. War creates a lot of jobs for people. So let's just slow down and look at this thing. Take time to go back to the Bible and read you know, what this thing is saying about people that's coming before us.
Well, Rudolph, let me just jump in because we're going to run out of time. It's a good reminder for us to keep our eyes on the broader picture, no matter what side you're on. Again, if you supported Donald Trump or not, some interesting comments from Rudolph. Only about 30 seconds left. So, Leticia, we covered a lot of ground here. You have any hope going forward for more progress? You talked about what happened in the last 8 years. How are you feeling now?
So my feelings have remained unchanged. The work that needs to be done, you know, before Donald Trump came, it still needs to be done afterwards. And we need to keep pushing forward and have that faith within ourselves that we can make progress and that there can be change and that we are the change.
Leticia Doucette's a disability rights activist and board member of Rochester Accessible Adventures. Great having you here. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Teresa Bowick, Nurse Bowick, I know I'll see you soon, and it's always nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time on the program today.
Thank you.
Teresa Bowick and Joe Torrey is a professor of history at the College of Brockport. Let's get in touch, and I hope to see you this summer then. We'll come back and talk about the work you're doing every summer here. Can we do that?
You got it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. And listeners, we took a lot of phone calls, and the phone never stopped ringing. A lot of feedback on this, so thank you for that. Let's get our only break here as we switch subjects and more connections straight ahead.